You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
One day I understand. One day, go see the baby be born and come back. You're a Major League Baseball player.
Did I not tell you?
Yes, you did.
See, don't answer. These are rhetorical questions because you know I told you and you know I'm
not. Analytics don't work at all. It's just a crap to some people who were really smart made up to try to get in the game because they had no talent.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bowed. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win.
Hello and welcome to Hot Takedown, 538th podcast about the week in overblown sports assertions and the numbers that prop them up or tear them down. What do you think about that intro, guys? I've been playing with that line.
You're workshopping something new.
Just the week in sports narratives.
That is so eloquent, Chad.
Yeah, that's who I am. That voice you hear, for the first time, all three of us, those voices you hear, all three of us are together. Kate Fagan, ESPNW's Kate Fagan. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Chad. I've been waiting 2 months to say that.
I know. Great to see you.
I think I actually said it 2 weeks ago, even though it was to Neil. I was like,
but you still said hi, Chad.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because I just missed you so much.
I think I heard that in my fever. That was either in my fever dream or while I was listening to the podcast while I had a fever. Thank you guys for filling in that week. And Neil, I guess you're here too, right?
I'm here.
Not very exciting though.
Nah.
Yeah.
He's here.
I'm always here.
Kate, how are your travels? to
Bookland or to Russia Land or both?
Which felt more arduous? Going to Russia or writing half of a book?
Going to Russia.
Yeah.
The visa process. Wow. They really make it hard to get into that country.
Writing up to Vlad. He'll hook you up. So on today's show, guys, all Super Bowl, all show. Except for Sig Dig. I think Allison has a non-Super Bowl Sig Dig. But we are going to talk Super Bowl or whatever I'm allowed to call it without violating an NFL trademark. Panthers, Broncos, the ascension of King Cam, the farewell to Lord Payton, the last challenge of the Panthers' strangely great season, the final test for the Broncos' all-time defense. It's the Super Bowl next up on Hot Takedown. How's my Jim Nance? Was that good as a promo?
That was.
I'm gunning for Jim Nance's job. We needed some epic music in the background. Yeah. Maybe they can put that in post.
That'd be great.
You did the best you could, though.
Thank you. So we're going to talk a few different angles of Super Bowl week. We're going to talk about quarterbacks, defense, and then the hot take-a-sphere that emerges whenever the Super Bowl comes around. So let's start. We're on NFL discussion start, which is with the quarterbacks. For those overly obsessed with narrative, which no one would ever accuse us of being, one could see this game as a passing of the torch of sorts. You have an icon of the older generation of quarterbacks in Peyton Manning, who's on the cusp of retirement, it seems, playing against a quarterback who typifies this new blend of QB who is an athletic scrambler but can also really fling it from the pocket and has really come up from the college game and extended that into the pro game. So here's Adam Schein at the great Mad Dog Sports Radio on the two quarterbacks.
This Super Bowl is about Cam Newton and Peyton Manning. I think that the prevailing storyline that people are rooting for is, in fact, Peyton Manning to win a championship and ride off into the sunset. But this, make no mistake, is Cam Newton's Super Bowl. He is a damn doing, touchdown throwing, touchdown running, touchdown dancing, pants wearing face of the National Football League. And Cam Newton is the best player in the National Football League.
He's wearing the pants.
So the pants are on his face.
He's the pants wearing. Have you guys ever worn a pair of pants on your face?
No.
Not for very long.
But would you wear a pair of Cam Newton's pants on your face, those silver and gold ones that apparently have set the world afire?
I need to try this pants wearing on the face situation.
You'd be a star in the NFL if you just
wore
pants on
your face. That is the loveliest hot take we've had.
Maybe theme song worthy.
Could be
pants
worthy.
Pants wearing face is just a great phrase. Okay, so Neil, in November, you wrote that Cam Newton was, and I quote Neil, decent, but not great. Now, he hadn't put any pants on his face yet.
That we know
that
of.
That changes everything.
And you also wrote that quarterback play probably isn't the main driving force behind the Panthers' success. Neil.
God, what were you thinking?
I know, right?
What's up? How
defend
do you feel about
yourself.
That? Do you consider that what I just read a take? Let's start there.
I mean, I guess it was a take. We wrote it and put it on the site and kind of made an assertion.
But backed by evidence.
Right. I mean, at the time, you know, it was backed by the evidence that we had at the time. I don't really feel bad about it because, first of all, it's not like they've been proven to be better than the other teams that started 11-0. You know, they can't go back and play the 1985 Bears or something like that.
We should remind listeners that you said they were the worst 11-0 team of all time.
Right, yeah. Out of very few 11-0 teams.
Very, very good
11-0 teams. There,
listeners, if you could
teams.
See Neil's body language right now, it's rather defensive.
Oh, yeah. No,
he's backpedaling.
I'm sweating profusely. You know, it also doesn't help that you guys just have this heat lamp in my face. I'm in the interrogation room.
I also want to say that I read that piece and then went on to assert that they would get eliminated from the playoffs very early.
On the basis of that piece?
Chain reaction.
I'm just saying
takes.
That, like, I usually.
I never said anything about the playoffs.
I trusted that
playoffs.
You were like, look, they're weak. They're a weak 11-0 team. And so, I mean, it cost me as well.
Neil, think of the children when you write your next
won't
piece.
Someone please yeah. think of the Carolina Panther fan children, I guess.
All right. So, Neil, in that moment of time, all of that may have been true. Things have changed since then. I mean, are
oh,
we
yeah.
looking at a different team than we were when you wrote that, or was something faulty? Not faulty, but you know, were things being hidden that we weren't able to see when you wrote that earlier in the season with the Panthers?
Well, I mean, I guess from a fan's point of view, one of the great things about the NFL is that teams can sort of appear to change who they are very rapidly in the course of a season. I think it's a frustrating thing for an analyst and someone who likes to crunch the numbers like me, because it's tough to tell whether or not a team has truly changed and its underlying abilities really are different, or if it's just something that sort of they happen to be on a really hot run. And I guess in most cases, it's probably a little bit of both. And for the Panthers, I mean, they have the fourth most improved passing offense since midseason. Around about midseason was when the article that I wrote ran. And that includes the playoffs. Newton was the 13th most valuable QB in the league at midseason. He's been the second most valuable since, behind only Russell Wilson. And he's also the sixth most improved Super Bowl quarterback since they went to a 16-game schedule in 1978, in terms of the improvement between the first half numbers and the second half numbers of the season.
So it seems like Newton's gotten better.
He has played way better. And, you know, his completion percentage, which I touched on in the piece that I wrote also, it was hovering around the bottom of the league during the first half of the season, and mind you, they were winning, they were undefeated at the time, but he had a lot of indicators that showed that he really hadn't changed since previous years, and he was known for, you know, not throwing the highest completion percentage, turning the ball over a lot more than he has since he's undergone this apparent change at midseason. He has one of the best completion percentages in the league, and it's not just he's gotten lucky with, you know, the same types of throws that he's been making. He's making a lot fewer off-target throws. That's something that ESPN Stats and Info
what
tracks.
Does that mean,
off-target? Throws that the receiver has to kind of go out of his way to try to catch, and often they're not caught. They're overthrows. They're underthrows. He's just making fewer of those throws. He's been more on target, and it's not because he's making easier throws either. The ball has traveled roughly the same distance per pass through the air, so he's not throwing deep balls, which you would expect to be, you know, harder to complete. He's just been more accurate on the same types of throws, and his rate of interceptions is insane. He's only thrown two interceptions since midseason. And a lot of times, you know, that kind of production, even over the course of 16 games, can be illusory. A player's quarterback's interception rate is one of the biggest things to regress to the mean between seasons. But other things like completion percentage do tend to be sort of bigger descriptors of who you are as a quarterback and your rate of throwing deep. So some of the indicators show that maybe this Cam Newton, this new Cam Newton that we're seeing, is really who he is going to be from now on.
Right, because you have to think that perhaps some of his increased performance comes from how the Panthers have played through those 11 games. I mean, he'd never before in his career been sitting on a team with that kind of record, with that kind of consistency, with that kind of defense to allow him to, he certainly doesn't lack for confidence, but to allow him to flourish in a way that we hadn't seen before, when they were always kind of like 5-6 at the 11 game mark. I mean, in other years they were like slightly better, but never like that. And when you look at the QB matchup, it felt like for so long, it was like, okay, you've got a guy like Peyton who can sit in the pocket and make accurate throws when his arm is strong, or you've got Cam who's going to get out of the pocket and hurt you like a Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And it felt like you had to, like,
almost like a Flacco versus Kaepernick from a couple of years
ago.
Yeah,
like, you had to, like, give something up.
Mm-hmm.
And now, the way Cam has played over the last, like, 8 weeks, it's like, this isn't like an evolution to a different style of quarterback where you're just, it is an evolution to a different style, but it's not like he's giving anything up over the last week.
Kate, there was
which is crazy.
There was something you said, which is that he's never lacked confidence, right? That's always been the rep of Cam Newton.
That's how it appears, right?
And so, but I wonder if we're confusing some things because he had a really good stretch of games that he's sort of like, we're about to talk about whether or not the Panthers regress to their record, whether they end up starting to play like the team they looked like they were. Has Cam Newton started to play like the player that he displayed his confidence as such?
You got to fake it till you make it.
Yeah, like, I'm not sure I'm quite saying that right, but, like, you know, Neil, you said the last 6-8 games, whatever it is, maybe there's something real happening to Cam Newton that he's changing as a quarterback. Maybe it's just that this is the only time where his persona has matched up with his play, and so we figure it must be the harbinger of something new and true because it feels like it fits all of a sudden, like something has come and locked in.
Right. It's kind of like he created this hollow version of Cam Newton, and we always saw it, but we were like, he's not living up to all of these dances and celebrations, and now he's like filled that hollow figure with like the stats and the play that we've kind of thought maybe he was capable of, and so we're like, oh, this is him.
But my point is that doesn't suggest that that's always going to be
him.
At the Super Bowl it might be, I mean, you know, because, but I'm not sure that now we've now seen Cam Newton's career over the last how his career going to end up over the
last are we going to see these statistics for consistently for the next five years? I mean, that would be like historically impossible.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, I think this also speaks to sort of how widely the media's perception of someone, or maybe our attitudes toward certain players, can change when their underlying play maybe hasn't changed. Because it's worth noting that Cam Newton was actually a good quarterback for a number of years, even when the Panthers were below 500 last year. And he was, I think it's safe to say, one of the most underrated, if not the most underrated quarterbacks in the league leading up to this year, because his stats were actually his personal individual stats were a lot better than Carolina's record. And so you had sort of the dumb hot take machine of the, you know, past couple years was that he wasn't a winner. He, you know, wasn't clutch enough because his personal numbers did not match the team's record.
And even when we did our stat boy, you know, take on QB ratings, it was really interesting to see how, like, the rudimentary statistics on how we measure QBs.
Oh, was he one of our guys?
He was the guy who, like, when you looked at win-loss, and then when you looked at the very basic QB statistics, like, he wasn't in the mix as one of the best QBs, but when you took in, like, expected yards per play, and like, the more intricate measurements, he was, like, a completely underrated QB. And it was like when Carolina signed him to that massive extension, a lot of people were like, well, is he worth that kind of money yet? Because from the outside, he didn't seem like he was producing, like, on the very basic QB level.
So let's move on to Peyton Manning, the other guy, who's still playing football.
We've got a couple minutes left to talk about him.
So, Neil, you wrote a piece this week at 538, in which I believe the headline, which I don't have in front of me, was that one of the proposed headlines, I think, was that Peyton Manning is the worst Super Bowl quarterback of all time.
I think that ended up being the headline.
So what has made Peyton this bad this season? And, like, we've talked about him and aging before on the show. If not, we've at least
sure,
written about it.
Sure, we made funny jokes about it, at least.
And so, you know, what am I looking at here that makes him this different than what we've seen? Is it the inaccuracy? Is it that the offensive line in front of him is worse? Have you been able to figure out what went wrong?
I mean, I think what's really kind of mind-boggling about the collapse of Peyton Manning, who, by the way, was still one of, if not the best quarterback in football as recently as last season. Certainly 2 years ago, he had one of the best seasons of all time by a quarterback. But if you look at his stats this season, and it's really like across the board, what, no matter what category you look at, he's dropped in yards per attempt. He's dropped in touchdown percentage. He's dropped like crazy in interception percentage. And by dropped, I mean dropping in terms of his interception percentage has become awful. He's thrown way more interceptions. Really, the only thing that stuck for him is his sack rate, which is kind of his classic hallmark of getting the ball out quickly. But when he's gotten the ball out quickly this year, it's oftentimes been to members of the other team, not so much to his own teammates. So it's really kind of tough to say what has gone wrong with him and pinpoint a reason. But we do know that this is far from the Peyton that we've known over the years.
And it's hard to imagine that there's like a huge reversal coming.
Yeah.
Because even listening to him talk about that he wishes he could throw with his left hand, you know, because of the injuries and I'm assuming the neck surgery and other things that have led to just such a weakened state in his throwing arm, you're kind of like, okay, well, if he's going to win this Super Bowl, it's going to be like piecemeal. Mm-hmm. But the one thing with Peyton is like we give him so much credit as like the all-time like adjuster at the line, right? Like he's Omaha. The guy. Thank you. Yeah. The good Nebraska calls.
Right.
I mean, he's the guy who can figure out what he's seeing and like make those tweaks. And so there is a part of me that's like, well, why can't he like turn that lens on himself a little bit in this Super Bowl to make the ultimate adjustment?
Yeah, but the Broncos already are playing a different kind of offense than they were when Peyton had his great season 2 years ago. I mean, this is not a team. This is a team that has adjusted to a guy with a weak arm. And how much adjustment can a player do if the whole point of your position is you have to use that arm that might be weakened?
Well, but then you got to look at like Carolina and that defense, which is already amazing, and they're going to be able to not even worry about certain throws that they at least think that they're not worried about certain throws. Be like, okay, that out 20 yards out, like he can't make that throw. So I mean, there's like then Peyton has to go through like that tick down being like, they think I can't do this, so I can, you know, like, I think if any quarterback can kind of figure out what the counter to what Carolina's going to do could be, it could be Peyton. That's what I'm saying.
And, I mean, I'm not sure how much they have adjusted during the regular season on a per-carry basis. Denver was not a very good rushing team, and they were one of the worst passing teams in the league. So all together, offensively, if you mash it all up, they're one of the worst offensive teams ever to make the Super Bowl. And that's without taking into account that, like you said, Carolina is a really good defense. So it's going to be all on that Denver defense and the special team to a lesser extent, just to be able to keep things competitive, I think.
Great segue. Love the segue, Cal, the two of you just exhibited. We're going to talk about the defense. So the Broncos and Panthers have the league's top two defenses, as rated by DVOA, the acronym that every time I say I need Neil to help me explain. Neil, can you just bail me out here?
Yeah, so that stands for defense adjusted value over average. I guess defense adjusted is hyphenated, so it only counts for one letter. But DVOA is FootballOutsiders.com's metric for judging basically just on a per play basis how effective you were at going toward scoring points or on defense preventing points. It's like expected points, but it's their own flavor that accounts for strength of schedule.
Okay, so that these two teams are good, we trust.
I think
this
we need to do like a quick stat school here.
Well,
I think we talked about that,
yeah,
in stat school.
So.
Did we?
For football.
See, man, the lessons of stat school are so fleeting. It's just like
actually. We'll have to have a booster course.
I think we did. So when you combine these two teams, it's the second best combined defensive Super Bowl ever, behind Super Bowl 14, which I know we all remember.
I love Super Bowl 14.
And so the Broncos are supremely good in their pass defense, as we saw last week against the Patriots, which has led to an old cliche ricocheting around, including out of the mouth of Tony Gonzalez, who has our second take this week.
I'm looking at Denver, and I still say defense wins championships. And I think Peyton's going to come out and play well enough to get this job done.
Defense wins championships.
But the best defense is a good offense.
Ooh, that's like a second level cliche on top of the first.
Rebounding won championships, or is that just a completely different sport?
Different stats.
Oh, okay.
So, Neil, has there been, do we know, can we settle this old debate? Does defense win championships? And does it matter how good the offense is that the defense is playing against?
It's actually a little confusing if you use the Super Bowl as a lens, because there's been research done over football just in general that says offense actually contributes more to sort of the quality of a team than defense, because defense is either it's like harder to measure, or it's less persistent, so you can kind of count on offense to be there for a team more so than defense. But in the Super Bowl, and it's not a big sample, as we know, it's only 50 games as of this year, so not even 50 yet, it's only 49. But the better regular season defense, again, according to DVOA, wins the Super Bowl about 60% of the time. And if you run a fancy regression model on trying to predict the final score of the game based on the offenses and the defenses of the two teams, that the differences in defensive quality exert almost 2.5 times the influence on the final score of the game than differences between the two teams on offense. So that seems to suggest that maybe there's something to Tony's old yarn about defense winning championships, at least in the NFL.
Well, how frequently, to put you on the spot,
sure,
did the best defense in the NFL win the Super Bowl?
That is something that I don't know off the top of my head.
I didn't know if it was part of it.
But that's got to be harder, because the more games you play, the more chaos there is in the NFL, and the more that defense could be overwritten by some other factor that came into play, special teams, let's say.
Oh, yeah, or an injury, quarterback.
Right.
Or...
And so, but in the one Super Bowl game, and so, well, right. Tell me if I'm wrong here, Neil, is it actually good to only look at the championship game about whether defense wins championships?
No, I think, you know, no matter what you're looking at, the more of a sample that you can get is what you want. So, you know, limiting to 49 games of Super Bowl history, without any reason to think that the Super Bowl is necessarily different from any other playoff game, you know, you could even expand it to the universe of regular season games if you wanted to.
Aside from the neutral field.
Yeah, I mean, once you take into account the who's at home, I don't really see any reason, but... we've done some research on the Super Bowl in general that might make you think that the Super Bowl is its own kind of different animal from the rest of football games. Aside from that neutrality of the field, the games are higher scoring than average from the year in question. And our boss Nate Silver did a story last year for the Super Bowl about how it's just harder to predict. The point spread in the Super Bowl is really freaking weird compared to every other type of game in the NFL. Power rating system, like we have these ELO ratings in-house that try to determine how good each team is, and those are pretty good predictors of every other type of game. But then when you have those for the Super Bowl, the point spreads for the Super Bowl tend to be like out of whack for them. The favorites are favored by more than ELO says that they should be, and if you had bet on the underdogs throughout the 90s, you would have been crushed on the market because the underdogs just got killed. But then around about maybe 10-15 years ago, if you bet on the favorites to win, you would have gotten crushed, and you should have bet on the power ratings. So the Super Bowl is a weirder game for whatever reason than other games, so maybe that also lends credence to the idea that we should treat it separately, and maybe defense does matter more in it.
And sounds like we shouldn't gamble on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea in general.
But I'm wondering, because I think you said that 60% of the times in the 49 Super Bowls, the better defense won. But I'm wondering, because in this matchup, we could easily say you would give the nod to Cam Newton as the better quarterback. I'm wondering how often, like, the better rated quarterback won in the Super Bowl, because that would completely offset the defensive advantage if it's like, well, 70% of the time, the better quarterback wins.
Oh, sure.
The Super
Yeah.
Bowl.
Yeah. And it's not mutually exclusive, right, where, you know, the better defense can't possibly have the better quarterback. And in this case, I would say the disparity between the two quarterbacks is far more vast than the disparity between the two defenses, even though Denver is the fourth best team in terms of regular season defensive DVOA ever to participate in a Super Bowl, which is pretty, you know, cool in and of itself. But this is also one of the biggest quarterback mismatches in Super Bowl history. I think if you look at the regular season numbers, the difference between Cam's numbers and Peyton's numbers is the sixth biggest in Super Bowl history.
And so, especially if you take like the last 10 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's using Cam's whole season, right, not the enhanced version that we surmised might have been, you know, and it might be in play this week.
So, all right, I think we're ready for prediction times. Now that we know all this about defense and about quarterback play and about what's going to happen. 538's ELO model, which we talk about a lot, the power ranking model, has Carolina favored 59% to Denver's 41%.
About 2.5 points.
In the game. That's about a 2.5 point spread. Vegas, though, has set the line at 6 points in favor of the Panthers. So you're giving six if you pick the Panthers. I think we should do the predictions with the point spread, right?
But which point spread?
Let me ask this. Do any of you think that the Broncos are going to win outright? Do either of you think that?
No.
No.
No. Okay. So with the points, let's gamble a little bit, guys.
I don't know what that means.
So are the Panthers going to win more than six?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're taking the Panthers.
Got it. Thank you.
I would say...
I stay away from Vegas.
Bad news for you.
If six is the number, then I probably would shade under that, and I would say that the Broncos will lose by less than 6 points. But it does go to the weirdness that we were talking about with... This is another example of Vegas and ELO, or a more kind of objective power rating system, being at odds with each other. You don't see differences of one system picking 6 points as the line and the other by only 2.5 that often on regular NFL games, but you see it here.
But because didn't you just say like historically the spreads are bigger than
they're
you
weird,
would anticipate?
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe Vegas is taking that into account?
Maybe. Maybe they know that we know that there's a trend here. And
this
so
is what Peyton needs to do with the Carolina
That's
defense.
Right, yeah.
See?
The mind games.
I think this is going to be another
blowout.
Seahawks, Broncos, Super Bowl. That was 41-7, right?
No, 41-8, right? They didn't 43-8. I know the Broncos scored eight points because they were
the first.
You have a Super Bowl square or something that you lost
safety.
That on?
Yeah, I read. Right.
Oh, was that
the first
safety?
Play was
right.
The hike
right,
over
right, right,
Peyton's
right.
head.
That's
it was
right.
Yeah, in MetLife.
But that scored
yeah,
points never... for Seattle though. So it was just a strange game.
But that's why Broncos ended up with like eight, right?
No, because the points with the Seahawks.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, so I don't remember how the Broncos got eight, but I do remember it was, I think, the first of its kind. So you know,
it was a double safety Super Bowl. We just don't remember.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll see it again.
So it sounds like Kate and I have the same money down, and Neil, you can collect when we're wrong.
I guess so.
All right. We thought we'd pause for a moment, acknowledge that for lovers of the hot take, there is no better week than the one in between no NFL games, unless you count the Pro Bowl, and the end-all, be-all of NFL games in the Super Bowl. When the NFL decided a few years ago to always have 2 weeks between the conference championship and the Super Bowl, it pumped more laughing gas into an echo chamber. Here is just a sample of some of the crazy stuff that people have been saying this week.
I was trying to figure out what makes Cam special and so unique. The narrative of people don't like Cam Newton, that's off. The reason why I said he's so polarizing, actually, is he's really unifying us and we're not realizing it.
It is the great alibi that all black athletes have. If you don't like me, that means you have to be a racist. It's not because he is black that we don't like Cam Newton.
Well, because if there's one thing I despise in championship matchups, it's a blowout. As far as I'm concerned, it's supposed to be the best against the best. Don't have me sitting down to watch this Super Bowl, and in the first quarter, I already know the outcome because you get ramrodded.
And I'm telling you, this is like a storybook ending for him. He's not going out like that. He's still Peyton Manning, you know. He's going to pull through somehow. Cam Newton, who knows? He'll throw a couple interceptions. The guy's going to weep on the sidelines, and it's going to be over.
Predicting Cam Newton's tears. So rather than address those hot takes, I thought we could talk about what makes them, where they come from, how they come to being. Kate, in your non-hot takedown life, you appear on a show that has the word take in the title every now and then, First Take.
It's First Take, though.
As opposed to hot take?
Yeah.
Yeah, they would.
Your first take could be really super sophisticated and smart.
Absolutely.
First thing in the morning.
That's what first takes are.
Yeah. Well, aren't the first takes maybe like the first ones out of the oven, so they're the hottest?
For some people, but for me, I make sure to make my first take really
cool
well thought out.
It's lukewarm.
Really nuanced.
So, Kate, I was wondering if you could just, like, what is it like in this kind of dead sports week where you really have nothing going on? To be on a show that has to fill some airtime, shall we say, and like figure out what you're going to talk about. What's that like?
What's it like to do First Take and then drive here and do Hot Takedown?
Yeah, exactly.
And look myself in the mirror every single day. No, the interesting thing about doing First Take, especially in this week, is how clearly you recognize that you so easily could have picked another thing to say and been completely justified in saying it. Like, because all fans of the Broncos and the Panthers right now are vigilant about what everybody's saying, and they're amped up. So, like, immediately if you say something on First Take, for example, I read Neil's piece on Peyton having the worst regular season of any QB to eventually play in the Super Bowl, and I repeated that on First Take, and, you know, the Bronco fans then are looking at that. They'll go back to, I think it was Bart Starr, who in 67 had the same number of TDs versus INTs as Peyton. I believe this chart was up on ESPN. And then that team ended up winning the Super Bowl. So Bronco fans are like, look at it through this lens. And you just as easily, I could have been like, look, this is why Peyton's winning this game. Do you remember?
Because of Bart Starr.
Do you remember Bart Starr?
The legend of Bart
Starr. Do you remember Bart Starr in 67? Because I do.
I mean, I think it says something that they have to go back to the year 1967 and the passing environment there to find a comparable quarterback. But go on.
The point is just that, like, you kind of pick the one thing that you feel like has the most rational take narrative to it that you can truly defend, but you very easily, like, at least when I'm doing, I very easily could have been like, you know what, I could have picked the Broncos and justified it from this angle with these reasons, and, you know, Peyton adjusting and all that. So it's always very, like, at the last minute I'm like, I'm going with this.
Yeah, I mean, we joke on the show about whether or not 538's own assertions are takes quite often. It's just about what you believe evidence should be in a way, right? Like, is evidence past precedent and Bart Starr is enough, or is evidence an empirical data set, which is, I think, where Neil would come down on. But I wonder, too, you know, what is it about this week that leads to that montage that we just heard? Is it that there are only, you know, two teams still playing and we, like, don't have anything else to focus on? Because it seems to me like we now have this infrastructure of sports talking, and this also applies, of course, to politics and things like that as well, that has to train their attention on something. And the fewer teams there are to train on, the more hyperbolic you have to be to get heard within that chamber. And so with only two teams, there are only so many storylines to turn over. And so if Cam Newton says something about why people don't like him, and it's because he's African American, then that is just, you know, it's a feast, basically.
Yeah.
And that would be a feast regardless, obviously, if he said that during the regular season. But there are no other storylines to distract from it. And so we're left with a sort of like a war. There's a word
vacuum.
For this. Not a vacuum. When the mosquitoes evolve with pharmaceuticals. Oh my gosh!
But you were just dangling out there all by yourself because I have no clue what this word is.
All right, let's.
All right, hot takedown listeners, tweet at us.
Oh man,
say something to us in the comments.
No, it's on the tip of my tongue. I rarely do this on the podcast.
Don't give up. Let's just sit here trying to figure out this word for a while.
You'll think of it later. But I think. Can we, like, verify that the takes are hotter over these 2 weeks?
Can you analyze
Can we
the
measure
takes?
The hotness Ooh. Of the takes, the heat of the takes? I've seen no empirical evidence. I mean, what you're saying makes sense to
Hold
me,
on.
Chad.
You're taking down my hot take about hot takes.
I'm not taking it down because I don't have evidence, but I
podcast.
Want evidence as to whether it is, because I think you could make the case that people are saying dumb things all the time, and that the hotness of each take on average might not be different this week. It's just that we're paying attention to it because there's something there of the idea that we're only paying attention to one matchup, and so we're culling all of the takes that
you
are...
You think it's on the consumer, not on the producer? That
no.
As consumers,
well,
we think things are hotter because we have fewer things to pay attention to, not that the producers of the hot
we're
take have
We're paying more attention.
To
yeah,
on.
Maybe we're noticing the hotter takes because we are not listening to a varied, different takes from across the sportosphere. We're just listening to takes about the Super Bowl, at least compared to other NFL takes
question.
That can happen.
Like,
well, and I think if it's all sports media is talking about, the consumer of the takes becomes, I don't want to use the word educated about them, but is more knowledgeable. And, like, there can't be that many football fans left who haven't thought through their own reasoning about Cam Newton and whether, if you don't like his celebrations, are there any racial undertones? I think we get to this place where the consumer of the hot takes has actually digested the takes and come up with their own opinion, as opposed to during the rest of the year, it's like quick hot take on the Cavs, quick hot take on Kentucky basketball, quick hot take on the WNBA, LOL, just kidding. That never happens. Quick hot take on football. And you just kind of like you take them all in, and you're like, well, I don't know how I feel about all that. I can't get educated enough to refute that or to support that. But in the football, in this one week, we all have developed our own opinions, and so some look like hotter and more hollow in their logic than others.
And in normal circumstances, we would not be able to detect the full
hot take-ity
hotness.
And I also think it's like from a spectacle point of view, the Super Bowl has created this very like huge mammoth space where I don't think there's a ton of humanity there that we're any longer connected to. So it's like I can say anything I want, as hot as I want, about this whole massive fireworks, plane, spectacle, music event happening over here, because it's not really
personal.
There's
no feelings, right?
There's no. It's just like, let me say the thing that I like that first comes to my mind, because we're not even tethered to it anymore.
And there are probably other people who are saying things that are equally ridiculous, so you don't feel like you're going out on a limb when you say something absurd, because there are other, you know, two or three other people that have said the exact same thing. Solidarity in idiocy.
So we've solved it. We've explained the full hot take landscape.
I still want the take hotness thermometer, but I'm not sure if we can cook that up until next season.
Okay, good. I'll off season work on that.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to think about what I could not quite articulate. Can I just explain my brain fart to you guys real quick?
Sure.
Okay. So mosquitoes.
Okay.
They evolve faster than the drugs that can fight them, right? So they develop resistance.
Right.
And then they become a different, through generational change, become a different kind of mosquito. And so it's really hard to try and push back against mosquito-borne diseases. There's a word for this.
Okay.
And that is what I could not explicate. And I will remember the moment I leave the studio. No, it's not evolution. Jeez, Neil. All right. Let's leave it there on the Super Bowl. I feel like we know more about the spectacle, as you said, Kate, that we're about to take in on Sunday. And let's move on to Significant Digit. Alice McCann, every week you bring us telling numbers from the world of sports. What have you brought us this week?
This is only loosely in the world of sports, but keeping with the tradition of today's all Super Bowl only, the significant digit is 18%. That is the increase in flu deaths in areas whose home team makes it to the Super Bowl.
Whoa.
Researchers from Tulane and Cornell looked at mortality data for the past like 30 years, and they found that areas that send teams to the Super Bowl experience an 18% increase in flu deaths in those years relative to other
areas.
Because
I'm at the Super Bowl party and like dipping in the guac, and the flu is in the guac, and the flu kills me.
Yeah, they said. I mean, Super Bowl falls like during the height of flu season in the winter. Yes, lots of
community and sharing
and touching.
Yeah. You guys are uninvited for my Super Bowl party.
I never got the invite. So now I'm uninvited?
Oh, this is awkward. Sorry.
Yeah, that was
sorry,
really weird.
Try sitting between them.
So, weird. Wow. That's so interesting.
Just reaffirms my hatred of all things NFL.
Social?
So, yeah.
I was supposed to go to Denver in a couple weeks, but I'm going to be canceling that trip.
Mm-hmm.
Just not doing anything now, Kate.
I'm just not going to go if there's an
Oh, because there are so many flu-ridden
Because there's
victims
an 18%
there.
Increase in the flu situation in Denver, right?
In deaths. So who knows how
exactly.
many more flus there are.
Right, but the end game seems to be quite higher.
They seem to control pretty well for things like they made sure it wasn't just like location specific, you know, like colder areas and stuff. Like they were like, it's definitely related to the Super Bowl. Like it's not just areas with increased flus or colder places.
It's interesting too, because can one extra day of socializing really bring about 18% more flu deaths?
It sounds like a lot.
That's a lot.
But flu deaths aren't that high.
Right, so an 18% increase
is like one or two people,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm assuming. I don't know if the numbers of flu deaths are radically higher mm-hmm. than that.
Man, we got to get these Tulane researchers.
Yeah, take it up with these guys from Tulane and Cornell.
All right.
Okay. Let's have them on.
And I'm going out to the Super Bowl, so I'll bring back
I'm going too.
Flu.
Bring
hey,
the Purell, guys.
Say let's share
Chet,
some
say
flu.
I can't anyone. Come to your party. I'm going to San Fran.
You guys are having a party in San Francisco?
In San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, okay.
You didn't get the invite?
Oh.
Well, Allison, thanks for coming in and bringing some more attention to the studio. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Kate Fagan, wonderful to have you back, even though apparently our relationship deteriorated while you were gone to the point where
we'll
you're not inviting me
up.
To things. Yeah. Neil Payne, you were okay too. Our podcast,
I always aim for okay.
Our podcast producer is Joe Sykes. Our podcast impresario is Jody Advergan. Our video producer is Ryan Nantel. We got production assistance from Tony Chow. Our intern is Jonathan Yales. You can email us at podcast@538.com. We'd love to hear what you think. You can find us on Stitcher, Downcast, all sorts of other apps. We're also on iTunes. Subscribe at itunes.com/538. Be sure to review and rate the show while you're there. It helps others discover the program. And there are other 538 podcasts going on. Don't forget, new election pod rocking up the iTunes charts. So review and rate that one too. Our theme song is by Mystery Mansion. I'm Chadwick Matlin. Talk to you next time.